Yeah, you know what you can get me, Pee-wee?
What?
El Hombre.
First of all, as a service to the listeners, this is an absolute forget about it.
El Hombre.
He's a pariah. I mean, it's like going after raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens.
El Hombre.
It is that time, everybody. He's with us every Tuesday at 5 o'clock. We bring in the one, the only, El Hombre, Michael Bradley, who joins us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. How are you, sir?
What's happening, everybody?
Is it? This is just your year, is it not? Just to be a sports fan in Philadelphia?
So far, it's pretty darn good, huh?
Goodness gracious. I mean, not only did the Phillies get to the World Series in a year where they weren't expected to get there, and your Michigan team is out there just trouncing people, and the Eagles are the best team in football record-wise, and now you land one of the prize players out there in free agency. You signed Trey Turner to an 11-year deal worth $300 million. Did you think that was going to happen?
Well, first of all, you forgot about the mighty Haverford School of Fords that moved up to third in the state rankings this week because State College lost.
Don't get greedy.
No, I'm just letting you know. They're 10-0. I mean, the season's over. There's nothing else they can do. So, I mean, you can't forget about them. I thought they were going to get Trey Turner. That was their preferred player. They were going to go after him strong. They're still about $32 million behind the second luxury tax threshold. Owner John Middleton has said they're not going to pay the big time luxury tax, but they will pay the first level. So they may still go after Carlos Rodon, the pitcher from San Francisco. But this was the guy they wanted. He's friends with Bryce Harper. Harper was very clear with Dave Dombrowski, the GM, that he wanted Turner. And, you know, Xavier Bogaerts or Carlos Correa would have been a pretty darn nice consolation prize. But I think Turner's the guy they wanted because they can put him at the top of the lineup. He plays shortstop. He hits for average. He steals bases. And he's going to bring – and he can hit for average, which is something they don't have a lot of on the team.
Well, Michael, I know there's a portion of any fan base that says, well, what about the back end when these guys are in their late 30s and you have all that committed? So – what about the back end, or is that okay when you have this much locked up in the short term?
I always laugh at people who get upset about the back end, right? Because here's the deal. In 11 years, the luxury tax will be like $340 million. And paying him 27 or 28 or whatever the heck they're paying him for 11 years, it's going to look like a bargain. And people laugh at that, but think about it. It used to be, oh my God, they paid him $12 million? I mean, that's a fourth starter now. Oh, how can they pay somebody $20 million? That's outrageous. That's like a fourth outfielder now. So I'm not worried about that because the threshold keeps going up. The revenues keep going up. The TV money keeps going up. And by the way, Ozzie Smith and Omar Vizquel and a bunch of guys played shortstop beyond 40 years old.
Mm-hmm. Well, and this speaks to, I think, I don't know if it was Dave or somebody was asking me about the health of the game and just asking, is it still regional? Yeah, it's still very regional. Baseball is. But I think it does speak to the health of the game. These owners are in it to make money. They're not in it to be altruistic and, hey, we just want to bring a great product to the city. And, yeah, it's costing me money. I'm losing money. But I just want you guys to be happy. No, that would be great, but that's not how it goes. So they're not spending that kind of money unless they're making that kind of money, and that's true of any franchise. So, yeah, I would say the health of baseball, the game itself, is very good because you see the numbers that I think Passan put out there without Judge being signed, without Correa, without Bogaerts, right, without Dansby Swanson, all these big names that we've been talking about, been over $1 billion committed.
Yeah, and by the way, even if the Phillies have a $240 million payroll this year, that's still less than they make each year on their regional sports network payment from Comcast or NBC Universal. They get $250 million a year from them. So they're still covering their entire payroll before they sell a ticket, a hot dog, or a hat. And last year they averaged 28,000 people a game. And I guarantee you, after going to the World Series and bringing in Trey Turner, and they're not done, they're going to bring some more people in, you're going to have 30 to 35,000 a night out there, back what it was in the 2007 to 2012, 13 era. That's a lot of money every single night. So you're right. These are businessmen. They are not philanthropists by any stretch of the imagination. I go with what my son says. There's no billionaire who's really a nice guy. So these guys are not out to say, oh, let's give the fans what they want. If that were the case, Pittsburgh would be spending money.
Hey, what do you think about now having to see Justin Verlander a few more times? I know it won't be like 19 anymore like it used to be in the divisions, but Mariners fans are certainly glad that he's out of the AL West. Now he goes to the NL East, though.
Maybe Kate Upton will come to a few games. So, I mean, there's an upside. But my point is, to hear about Verlander, he's a little bit injury-prone. He's older. Phillies have his number. I mean, they sure didn't seem too afraid to see him in the playoffs, I mean, in the World Series. But $43 million a year? Now you're getting a little crazy, right? I thought the Mahomes contract, right, about $550 million a year. Who's going to be the first $50 million a year ball player? Is it going to be Judge? Is it going to be somebody, you know, next year, the year down the line? And that's what happens. Every year the money gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and everybody starts, oh, my goodness, how are they going to? $28 million for Trey Turner in the year 2032 is not going to be ridiculous by those standards. I promise you.
Yeah, and it's also in baseball, it's about their own tolerance, their own fiscal tolerance, if you will. Right. All these owners are making money, even the Pirates, I don't know about the A's. I guess revenue sharing, they've got to be making money, but they're making money. So they can spend as much as they would like, as much as they can tolerate, whereas in football, you're dealing with a salary cap. You've got limitations that are entrenched versus a competitive balance tax in baseball. So. Watching the salaries grow in football is a little different. I know the salary cap grows every year, but is it enough to handle the truly escalating cost of quarterbacks? We were just talking about Geno Smith, Michael, and we played a cut from Richard Sherman saying, oh, he's going to get 30 next year, 35. He's probably looking at $40 million next year. I'm thinking, well, first of all, stop it. But, you know, you've got Aaron Rodgers right now making 50. You've got, you know, Russell Wilson is going to be making close to that amount as his contract goes on. At some point, you know, that it's going to be interesting to see where that ends, because you're going to have one guy who's going to be taking up a quarter of your salary cap.
Yeah, but here's the thing. When the Phillies signed Pete Rose to a contract in 1979, I think it was 4 years, $3.2 million total. And people went bananas. That was about 19, I think it was 79, 78 or 79. So here we are, we're 43 years later, and someone's going to get $50 million. And everybody's going bananas. The owners wouldn't be paying it if they weren't making the money.
Yep.
The NFL is a license to print money. It's why people want to buy the teams. The NBA is raging in terms of popularity. And baseball, again, gets a lot of money regionally. They still are getting money from Fox and from Turner for their national rights. And, you know, so the money is still there, and I can't see it going away.
Hey, Michael,
last thing. Mm-hmm. Don't forget the X factor in all of this, and that's sports gambling, which is still in its nascent stages and is only going to balloon, and all of the sports leagues are heavily tied and heavily profiting from their relationships.
Well, Michael, speaking of a sport that continues to be big money for the coaches, at least, college football, Deion Sanders, that was an interesting press conference, and Bob and Dave talked about earlier, his press conference over the weekend. But what do you think about that move from Colorado's perspective and then for kids who might want to go play for Deion?
Well, first of all, the press conference, I don't know if you saw the video of him addressing the team.
Yeah, that's what we played.
The same thing to the team that he said in the press conference. So it was, look, Deion is about one thing, right? And that's Deion. And you heard him say, I'm coming. Here's what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. I'm coming. Here's what I'm going to do. So Colorado needs a shot of personality into its program. I mean, let's face it. Who's the biggest personality in a Colorado football program?
Deion.
No, Ralphie. Right now, Ralphie is the Buffalo. So Deion's going to show up after the Celebration Bowl when Jackson State plays North Carolina Central. Then it will be Deion. He's going to recruit players. There's going to be guys who are going to come. He knows how to do the NIL. He's going to get the Denver businessmen out there and start to say, all right, fellas, let's get a collective together. Let's start paying these players. If he puts together a good staff, and I saw who he hired as his offensive coordinator, very respected guy, he will be okay. It looks like he's going to do the right thing with the staff, and then he's just going to be Deion, Coach Prime, and he's going to be the face of the program and the chief salesman. It's now, a very good move for a school that is utterly irrelevant on the college football scene.
Now, you brought up that clip of him talking to the team, and there was I was surprised to see the reaction. Some people really thought that was in poor taste, you know, telling these kids, "Hey, I'm coming, you know, I've got luggage, and it's Louis, you know, talking about Louis Vuitton luggage, but he's talking about
his
players." Yeah, but he's talking about he's got people to play these spots and go ahead and enter the portal if that's what you want to do. You know, maybe it was a little more blunt than they're used to hearing. To me, that was just like, "Hey, I need to know who's with me. We're turning the page here."
And by the way, when Jim Harbaugh took the Michigan job, they did that Showtime or HBO thing on him, and there was a scene of him telling a player, "Hey, you don't want to work? Go into the portal, transfer. I don't care." These coaches come in. How about the first workouts, right? Remember when the coach came in and they always said, "Well, you can tell he means business." The kids showed up for the first conditioning drills, and all they found around the field were trash cans because all they were going to be doing is throwing up. What do they think that these other coaches do? Walk in and say, "Hi, everybody. Let's have some fun. Football is great." No, they come in, they challenge the players the same way, and that's what he was saying. He wanted to find the guys on that team that went up to him afterwards and said, "Coach Prime, what do you want me to do between now and the day you show up? I'm with you. What do you want?" He wants those guys, and that's what every coach wants. So he just happened to have a little bit more of an evangelical twist on it and a little bit more look at me kind of twist on it, but these coaches challenge the players the same way every single time. You think Nick Saban is sitting around saying, "Hey, son, how's everything going today?"
Hey, by the way, you bring up Saban. I saw a story the other day about a number of players leaving Alabama, entering the portal. What's going on there?
Well, look, here's part of it. First of all, I go back, and I'm sure I said it on this program before. I had a coach tell me one time, Nick Saban needs graduation. And what they meant by that was Nick Saban needs players to leave because they can't stand it for more than 3 or 4 years simply because he's so darn demanding. Everything they do has to be perfect. Everything they do has to be toward the goal of making them a better player for Alabama and a better person for the program. These guys, some of them probably didn't like his tactics. Some of them probably came in thinking, "I'm going to play." And then they realized, "I'm not going to play." Let's look at where these guys go. Does player A go to Georgia, or does player A go to Georgia State? Does player B go to Tennessee, or does player B go to Middle Tennessee State? Let's see where they end up, and then you'll find out why they left. It was probably because they're not going to play.
Michael, what about Jim Harbaugh?
One last thing.
Yeah.
And yesterday, the first day of the portal, new record set. Like 750 or 760 guys entered the portal yesterday. The previous one-day record was 240.
Mm.
So everybody's going to the portal. What they're finding out is there are not a lot of great spots for them to land, and they're going to wish that they didn't. So some of these guys may be a little disenchanted, and they're going to say, "Oh, I'm going to find a better spot. You just wait and see." And then all of a sudden, they're sitting there in August going, "Where the heck am I going to play ball?"
Well, kind of along those lines, too. But back to the question I was getting at, because I know you kind of have some good insight on this. With the ever-shifting allegiances in college football, and you're almost starting anew sometimes, and with the rumors that always pop up around Jim Harbaugh this time of year, is he a college football lifer now, or is that itch going to be back to go back to the NFL?
Well, he said he's playing. He has said clearly, "I'm coaching next year at Michigan in 2023. Now, what happens in 2024? I don't know. I think he looks at next year's team and says, "I got Donovan Edwards. I got J.J. McCarthy. He's already picked up a lineman from Arizona State. He's got a couple guys coming back on the line. The defense is loaded with underclassmen who are just all killers." And he's looking at a non-conference schedule. It's like you, me, Bob, and Groz. So it's like, you know, and Groz is the tough game. So, you know, that's he's looking at next year going, "Why would I want to go and coach the Panthers or coach the Saints without a quarterback? Why don't I just stick around here another year? Maybe we make it to the championship game this year, and then next year we get all the way."
Hey, one of the things we were talking about earlier is the Seahawks have the Broncos' first-round pick next year, and as we sit, that's going to be a top-five pick. And the Geno emergence has certainly changed the expectation of that pick. Initially, it was like, "Hey, get that pick. Hopefully it's good. Get your future quarterback in the draft." Now, we'll see how they feel about Geno in the future, you know, what kind of deal he gets signed to in the offseason. But if you're the Seahawks now, considering their situation with Geno, and say you have a top-five pick, do you go quarterback? I haven't done a lot of the studying to look at if any quarterbacks are considered top five talent. But
Bryce Young, C.J. Stroud. I mean, you've got one of the four Heisman candidates who's coming out. No way Stetson Bennett and Max Duggan are, you know, Heisman quarterbacks, and Caleb Williams can't come out yet. So those two, you know, there are other guys there that are thought to be, you know, very good players. And if you'll remember, when the Seahawks won the Super Bowl, Russell Wilson was on a rookie contract. He wasn't a rookie,
yeah,
but he was on a rookie contract, and that allowed them to spend money in other parts of the team. So I can't see if Geno Smith says, I want 3 years, $105 million, with $95 million of it guaranteed. If I'm the Seahawks, I say, is he a Super Bowl quarterback? I don't know. He's good. He had a tremendous renaissance, but this is a small sample size. And Carolina and Denver and New Orleans and a couple other teams might say, maybe we'll take a run at him and give him a 3-year deal for a lot of money. And Seattle may be saying, you know, goodbye, and we'll take one of those quarterbacks. The Eagles are in the same boat with the Saints. Last night was a great day for Eagles fans. Tom Brady's our hero now because the Saints, we have the Saints pick here. And so they're saying, we got a top five pick also.
Yeah, the problem is, I guess if we're just looking at quarterbacks top five, we went back through the last 10 years, and it's not a great list. You can look at
– no.
There were none last year, none taken in the top five. 21, it was Trevor Lawrence, who we're waiting to see, is he going to be live up to the hype he came in with. Zach Wilson is now sitting on a bench. Trey Lance is hurt. We have no idea if he's going to be anything. Joe Burrow's been great. Love him. Tua's had a bit of a renaissance year because even the organization was doubting him. We'll see. Kyler Murray, I'm out on him. Baker Mayfield, he was just picked up by the Rams. Sam Darnold. Mitch Trubisky, Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota, and Blake Bortles.
A lot of bad names.
Those are all top five quarterbacks taken in the last 10 years.
No, you're right. I mean, it's there's no guarantee. Remember, they're running these spread offenses, and while the NFL still has a lot of spread concepts, the defenses handle that stuff better. You know, a lot of times these guys come up to the line of scrimmage, look at the slot receiver, and they look at the guy covering them, and it's like an eighth grader. And they say, all right, I'm going to him. So you don't have that in the NFL. I mean, you got some, you know, not everybody's a great cornerback. But my point is, it's hard to predict. In this mock draft that you look at, Stroud and Bryce Young are in there. However, I would never pick an Ohio State quarterback because there's never been a good Ohio State quarterback in the NFL.
No, you're right. Maybe Fields will be that guy, but you're right.
He's a running back. Stop it. I'm serious. He's going to run for 1,000 yards. Great. So did Bobby Douglas. Remember him? Left-handed quarterback, Chicago Bears. They ran the option a couple times.
I know that the Bears have had Sid Luckman and Jim McMahon, and that's about it in terms of franchise quarterbacks.
Oh, no, they had Jack Concannon. He was pretty good.
Yeah. But their record holders
Brian
are like
Aaron Song. They ran, you know, Concannon called the trap again, and the Rams didn't go for it.
I think Eric Kramer, I think, holds some records for. I mean,
they had Tom Zach in there. Harbaugh played for them for a little while, you know. But no, you're right. They haven't had too many franchise quarterbacks.
Is that where you think, though?
Good Sid Luckman knowledge by you, by the way.
That's what happens when you live there for 5 years.
You know about all their slim and few franchise quarterbacks.
I hear about their linebackers and the glory days of Sid Luckman and Jim McMahon.
Ed Obradovich.
Is that where, though, I mean, is there more of a risk as a GM, as a front office, that you could cost yourself a job by missing on the wrong quarterback instead of saying, okay, with a top three pick, we're going to pick a defensive lineman. Doesn't pan out? Well, there's another guy there.
I wrote a piece about this and talked to some guys, and they were saying, you know, here's the thing. They talked themselves into it. Mm-hmm. We need a quarterback, so who are we going to pick? Who's the guy, right? And it's like, wait a second. This is really a big mistake that you've talked yourself into Wilson if you're the Jets. You've talked yourself into Trey Lance. Wow, we need a QB. Do you really? Do you need this QB? I mean, do you need Malik Willis? Is he somebody that's going to be a great quarterback? I'm looking at a lot of mock draft right now that has Will Levis of Kentucky going ninth to Indianapolis. That's insanity. Anthony Richardson going to the Commanders. It's nuts. And it's like these guys are going to talk themselves into a quarterback because they need one. And then down the line, they're going to say, oh, boy, that was a mistake.
I'm sure we've talked about this in the past. Were you ever an old school boxing fan? Did you ever get into it?
Are you kidding me? Yes.
Okay. So did you see the news today? Mills Lane passed away.
Yes. Yes, 85 years old. Yeah, he was. I mean, I go back even further. You know, I'm thrilling Manila guy. I'm Frazier and Ali at the Garden with Frank Sinatra with a
taking pictures,
a press pass. Yeah, taking photographs. So yeah, I go way back. And we Philadelphia had a great. At one point, we had Cyclone Hart and Willie Worm Monroe and Benny Briscoe, and every now and then Hagler would show up. Had some great middleweight fights at the Spectrum.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so you've got an appreciation for Mills Lane. He was such a character, and obviously
yes.
His phrase, "Let's get it on," that's his yeah. big thing. And he had his. I forgot that in reading about his passing, they sort of chronicle his career, and I forgot that he had that TV Judge Mills. Did you ever watch that?
No, I never. I have to say, I have to admit, I never did.
He had one of the court programs back in. Let's see,
that's
it ran
classic.
1998 to 2001. Judge Mills Lane. That was the show.
Three hours. 3 years. That's pretty good.
Yeah. So, but yeah, just a character, and he suffered a stroke back in 2002, yeah. which I guess left him, you know, basically unable to speak. So he was partially paralyzed, and yeah, that's. I wasn't aware that he was that impacted. But I knew he had suffered a stroke in 2002, but I didn't realize it said it left him partially paralyzed and left him virtually unable to speak. So that's brutal. But,
yeah, that's rough. That's rough.
But yeah,
he was a heck of a personality, and you know, it's like you always knew it was a big fight when Mills Lane was there. Right?
Oh yeah, yeah.
That's kind of the way you looked at it. Who's the ref?
Well, he was the ref for Tyson Holyfield, the bite, the ear bite,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's big. Again, it's you know he was part of the whole show. The fact that a referee was saying had a catchphrase, right?
Yeah.
I mean, but then again, Ed Hockley, right? Had the guns.
Yeah.
All right. We always knew, you know, when Hockley was there, he's going to be showing off the guns on a, you know, the shirt that's too small for him.
Yeah.
So, I mean, sometimes they get that.
Yeah. Country Joe West and Angel Hernandez were going to go out there and just stink. So, you know, they got everybody's got their thing.
John McSherry.
He is El Hombre, Michael Bradley. You can find him on Twitter at Daily Hombre. At Daily Hombre is where you find him on Twitter. How's that been going, by the way?
It goes well. I mean, look, there's a few guys that are always anything I post, and if I could post something about like what's going on my street, and there's some guys that are going to like it, so I respect that. As I say, my man Sheridan's always liking everything that or retweeting everything that I post. So Seattle guys are nice now. It's funny. They when they engage, they don't come at me the way they used to.
All right. Well, there you go. You guys can interact with El Hombre or just wait for him to show up here every Tuesday at 5 o'clock. But at Daily Hombre on Twitter is where you find him, and find him here every Tuesday at 5. We appreciate it, Michael. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next week.
So long, suckers.
There you go. El Hombre, Michael Bradley. All right, coming up, the tight ends have been a very key part of this Seahawks offense this season, and we're going to speak to one of them. Colby Parkinson will join us in our player spotlight. Coming your way next with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.
This is the Player Spotlight, every week throughout the season with Wyman and Bob. Brought to you by Michael Subaru of Bellevue and Pacific Lamp and Supplies.
It is that time, everybody. We do it every day here with Wyman and Bob, our player spotlight featuring a member of your Seattle Seahawks. And joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline, tight end Colby Parkinson is with us. Colby, how are you, man?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, we always appreciate you taking the time. And give us a sense of what that was like out there yesterday. That seemed like, you know, you throw the records out. Doesn't matter who the Rams have or don't have going, what the record is. It's always a tough battle with that team. What do you chalk that up to?
Yeah, I think it comes down to a lot of things. You know, you have the divisional aspect, and then we play these guys twice a year, so it's going to be a little more chirpy, and it definitely felt like a playoff environment in there. It was a pretty fun game, and nice to get the win at the end there.
Seems like one that it was really fun to win on the road because, you know, you get a chance to be each other or around each other on the way home, but that was it was a pretty dramatic game. Did it feel like that on the sidelines as much as all the Seahawks fans felt it watching that game?
Yeah, definitely. You know, there's a lot of different points in the game where the momentum was swinging one way or another. So to be able to finish strong and, you know, get that score on the last drive was huge and definitely take some of that momentum going into this next week.
So what was it like to look across the line and see number 45, formerly number 54 for the Seahawks, or to see Bobby Wagner?
I mean, he's an amazing player. It was definitely weird seeing him in a different jersey, but fun to go against him and more than just practice for once. And he played a heck of a game, and I know he'll continue to do great things for them.
Hey, Colby, take us back to the offseason, because you look so much bigger than I remember you seeing you the year before. How much weight did you put on? How much muscle mass did you put on over the offseason?
Yeah, I gained probably about 15 pounds total, and I'd say, you know, 10, 11 pounds of that were muscle mass. And, yeah, I think that's really helped me out this year in my run blocking and giving me the confidence to go up against anyone and handle myself.
Hey, as far as developing a rhythm and things like that with a new quarterback, new line, new, you know, the offensive coordinator isn't new, but I would assume at this point there's a level of comfort with Geno and how he throws the ball, because the tight ends as a group, I think you guys were targeted a combined 8 times with 7 catches. It just seems like the tight ends have become more of a priority in this offense, and that rhythm has developed. Is that accurate?
Yeah, we've definitely built that confidence with Geno throughout the year. You know, obviously there's some growing pains early on, and we worked through those. And, yeah, we have complete trust in him. He's playing amazing football right now, and we know he'll continue to do so.
It's so different preparing as a player versus a fan. And so all of us were sitting there going, okay, they don't have Aaron Donald. They don't have Matt Stafford. They don't have Cooper Kupp. But for you guys, I mean, you're obviously aware that those guys aren't in there. But, you know, as far as your preparation, it's a lot more sort of standardized, right, than actually paying attention to who is and isn't in the lineup.
Absolutely. Yeah, and P always talks about that, how it's never about the other team. It's always about us. Each week is a championship opportunity, and it doesn't matter if they have the best guys or not. We're going to prepare the same and go out and play to the best of our abilities.
How do you like playing in that building? On TV, it looks really, really cool, but what's that atmosphere like in there?
It's really fun. SoFi is a really cool spot, and being from Southern California, I'm always blessed to have a lot of family there when we play down in L.A., so I had about 16 of the Parkinson crew out there, which was fun, and it was really cool to get the win in front of them.
Seemed like there was probably at least half of that stadium full of Seahawks fans. Did you get that sense?
Yeah, absolutely. It was kind of interesting, though. On all third downs, it wasn't necessarily just when we were on offense or defense. It was loud, so no one really had the advantage or didn't. But that kind of made it feel like a playoff environment, you know, where everyone's cheering on every single important play.
That's got to be cool. It feels like it's like that in every road game for you guys. There's a large contingent of Seattle fans that this team, just their fans travel very well. Is that something you pick up on in each stadium?
Yeah, absolutely. The 12s are amazing. They travel really well and always support us no matter where we're at.
Colby, all right, so now that you're a big, bad blocker, let's test it. Would you rather catch a 15-yard crossing route or get a pancake block?
Oof. I'm really liking this run blocking stuff I've been doing lately. Those pancakes feel pretty good. Yeah. Obviously, I want the ball in my hands more, and you know, I'll do everything I can to prove that I can be that guy. But you know, with the role I have right now, I'm happy to do my job in the run game.
Okay, hey. So your answer is both.
Yes.
There you go.
Right.
But he did say those pancakes feel pretty good.
Yeah.
So pretty good. Hey, just as far as getting the run game, I know yesterday, boy, you got hit with injuries right out of the – I mean, Ken Walker goes down after 3 carries. DJ Dallas goes down. Tony Jones Jr. is in there. So hard to get the run game going. But it seems like it's been a bit of a challenge recently. What do you see happening from your perspective?
You know, I feel like we're just we just need to get back to the basics. You know, make sure that we're taking it one play at a time, not getting too overwhelmed with the big picture. If we win our individual battles, we'll be able to get the run game going, and you know that sets up the rest of the offense. But it's pretty fun when we're able to still succeed on offense with the stuff that Geno, DK, Tyler, tight ends were all doing to help us out in the pass game.
Hey, Colby, lots of times you're lining up next to the two rooks, offensive tackles. We talked to Abraham Lucas the other day, and God, he's like got the maturity level of like a 30-year-old man. He's just very reserved. But tell us about those two rookies and their personalities. And it looks like they're playing really well.
Yeah, they're both doing an amazing job. Really good kids, too. I say kids. They're probably the same age as me.
But you're an old man now, Colby.
Yeah, they're doing great. Personality-wise, they're both really solid and fun to play with, very receptive to any, you know, coaching points that us tight ends might have to help us out in the run game, pass game, whatever it is. And, yeah, they're they're doing a great job, and I know they'll continue to do so.
Yeah, I just looked. You're only 23.
Yeah.
You're calling them kids.
Yeah, I'm younger than a lot of guys.
I love it. But you got a birthday coming up next month. You'll be 24.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Well, what do you do for that, by the way? The season will be happening. So what is that, just, hey, we'll celebrate after the season's over? How do you handle birthdays?
Yeah, not much I can do, especially my birthday usually comes around the last game of the year. This time it is the last game. So hopefully we'll be celebrating a playoff bid that Sunday night.
Favorite birthday present that you got when you were a kid?
Ooh, my parents got me a Weber barbecue when I was in middle school. I was always used to barbecue with my dad, and I got my own finally, and we would just go out in the backyard and grill up some stuff together.
Sounds like you take pride in that. You still doing that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I got a Traeger now, so I'm cheating, but it's fun to mess around with.
So what are you, a big Christmas guy? Do you get into the holiday and decorations and music and all of that, or how do you handle Christmas?
Oh, yeah. I love Christmas. My favorite holiday by far. So it's impossible to be in a bad mood when you're listening to Christmas music. And it's fun to be with family, you know, setting up the tree and all that and celebrating the birth of Christ.
See, that's why I tell these guys I start playing Christmas music in July. You know, I just
there you
love
go.
It. I love it.
All right, fake tree or real tree, Colby?
Real tree all the way. We just picked up our tree last week.
I had to surrender finally to the fake tree. I said I would never do it, but I'll tell you what, it went up in about 10 minutes, and it's going to pay for itself in 2 years. You see yourself ever being that guy?
No. Okay, no,
that's
can't
what
do
I
it.
Said when I was your age.
the smell, and I actually worked at a Christmas tree farm when I was in high school, so I have respect for those guys. So always got to support local small Christmas tree businesses.
Now, do you have secrets on making it last? It seems like that's the biggest problem, is it starts to dry. Even with the water thing in the bottom, it starts to dry out, and you got needles everywhere. What's the key?
Well, you got to make sure you get the fresh cut on the bottom when you pick it up. And other than that, just make sure it's watered, and then by the time December 26th comes around, you got to toss it out, or else your house will catch on fire.
Yeah, I had one that I put up early, like right after Thanksgiving, and it died, and I had to do the whole thing over again.
Ooh.
So, yeah, that was a rookie mistake. But
yep,
yeah.
Well, you said that your favorite present was the grill for your birthday. Do you have a favorite Christmas present?
Ooh, favorite Christmas present. I don't know. My family always gives pretty great gifts. Let's see. My brother last year got me some really nice cigars. That was a great gift.
Oh, cool. All right.
Yeah.
You're a cigar smoker.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Well,
all
Colby,
right, well.
We appreciate you taking time, as always. Congrats on the big win, and have a great week. And we wish you nothing but the best coming up through the rest of the season. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks so much. God bless, guys.
There you go. There's Colby Parkinson of your Seattle Seahawks, whose favorite gift as a middle schooler was a grill. Very interesting. All right, coming up, big moves might be done for the Mariners. We'll talk about that next with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Well, we got some news in the world of baseball. Now officially a former Mariner, Mitch Haniger has a new home with the San Francisco Giants, signs a 3-year, $43.5 million deal, $14.5 million a year. Kind of a bummer. I knew he was gone. We pretty much knew he wasn't going to be coming back. But now that it's official, still kind of a bummer.
And I think that lends you to see why the Mariners did not want to sign him. Because
14 and a half year,
they weren't, well, the multi-years. Now, if they were going to keep him, they would have done the qualifying offer. And then when they weren't going to do the qualifying offer, and it was more of a respect thing. I truly believe that. Like when you heard Justin Hollander say, and I think Jerry Dipoto echoed that at the end of the year press conference, they wanted to let him hit free agency because of what he meant to this team. And they wanted to give him that opportunity. So the Mariners are certainly not going to do that for 3 years, but good for the Giants, who have oodles and oodles of money to spend. Because I guess, what else did you say?
Oodles.
Yeah, they're still going to go after.
Yeah, here's
it's not taking them away from Aaron Judge.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Jeff Passan said outfielder Mitch Haniger and the Giants are in agreement on a 3-year, $43.5 million contract. Sources tell ESPN signing Haniger does not take the Giants out of the running for Aaron Judge. They have been pursuing both throughout free agency. That must be nice. Ryan Divish responded to that tweet saying, "We were talking with Jerry DePoto and Justin Hollander when the news broke about Haniger. They knew they were competing with the Giants, and the pull of going home would be a big draw for Mitch." I'd love to know how much they were competing. How into it were they? Were they, "Hey, man, we think we can get him back. We desperately want him back." Or were they like, "Yeah, it'd be nice to have him back for a 2-year deal or something like that." Like, I'm curious how intense they got in their pursuit of him.
3 seems like a long time. I don't know why. It just feels like 3 is a big commitment. Yeah, because he's been injured, because you have so many questions in the outfield and you still need to address that. If you have that contract weighing you down for 3 years, that's when, according to Jerry DePoto, you know, they want to be at their peak in 2026. So you don't really want that still lingering when you should have come to fruition with everyone else. So with all the other needs to address, it makes a lot of sense. It is unfortunate and it will stink to see him on a new team. But hey, it's a National League, so it doesn't hurt as much.
Yeah, it's looking at some other tweets here. Jerry DePoto on the Mitch Haniger signing with the Giants. This is from Daniel Kramer. It says, quote, "He went out and found out that his market was pretty robust, and we respected it and wish them well. Frankly, I'm glad he landed outside of the American League. I'm happy for him." I mean, he's, you know, there's well-documented, I guess, tension, perhaps, between Mitch and the organization at times. But that guy was nothing but a class act in that clubhouse. He was an absolute leader. He was loved by all of his teammates. The only downside to his time here is just availability. I don't know if you look at him as fragile or unlucky. I mean, he's had like serious injuries, you know, that led to other injuries, the groin injury that led to the back, that is surgery. So, man, I wish him the best. He was really, you know, when you did get a chance to talk to him, he didn't talk a ton. You know, he didn't do a bunch of interviews, but he was always really, really cool, very cordial and accommodating. You saw when he's healthy, 39 home runs, 100 runs batted in. He can be very, very productive. It's just, can he be available? And I'll be pulling for him.
The Giants, man, they're going to buy everyone, huh?
I've had the sense the whole time that Aaron Judge is going to go back to New York, and that's based on absolutely nothing. I just feel,
you think that's a hedge then on their part? Like, okay, well, we have to get an outfielder, so we got someone we know we can lock up.
According to Passan, they've been pursuing both of them. But I just feel like if you're Aaron Judge, unless the, and we don't know, we've heard the Yankees have said they've made multiple offers to Judge. At what dollar value, we don't know. But unless the Giants just blow that offer way out of the water, aren't you better off? The Yankees are a really good team, expected to be in World Series contention. They're a very good team. You're already a superhero out there. You know every nook and cranny of that field. You're an icon as it is. You stay there. You've got a different level of slack versus you go to any new team out there, you're expected to hit 62 home runs a year.
Sounds like a Russell Wilson issue.
Kind of.
The exact same thing.
It's kind of you come with that expectation. Yeah. So if you come up short, if you hit 52, you hit 50, they're going to go, and his average was a little lower, and we didn't get to where we wanted to go. Is he worth it? There's a different pressure that comes with that and expectation, whereas he's a known commodity. I mean, everybody knows him, but he's a Yankee, and he's got slack. He's part of a historic organization who's competing, who's good. If it's the difference between, and I was reading to you during the break that the Padres offered Trey Turner $342 million. He went to Philadelphia for $42 million less. So it's not always about the money, you know, and maybe in his case, he'll look at it and go, you know what? I've already established myself here in New York. They know me. I know them. If it's the difference between, I don't know, $10 million, $20 million, does he stay in New York?
West Coast, Best Coast.
I don't know.
No, it depends, because Trey Turner was the East Coast guy. He wanted to go back there. That's why he wanted Philly over San Diego. And Aaron Judge, West Coast guy, maybe he just wants to be back here.
We
can kind of weigh in on that more tomorrow, too, because there's a lot to discuss in terms of Mariners free agency spending. Well, just go get a guy. We'll go get a guy. Well, look, here's the example in Trey Turner. You can pay the most, you can offer the most money, and they still might not come.
Yeah. He took court. If you take Heyman, who's already had a gaffe today, apparently calling. I didn't see the original tweet, but Arson. I love that Arson Judge is trending on Twitter. I'm going, what the hell is going on? What is that about? And apparently he tweeted out Arson Judge and said there was an agreement with the Giants. Is that what it was?
He said Arson Judge to the Giants. That's so it. That's what it was.
So that's trending on Twitter.
But then he had to retract all of it.
Yeah, yeah. He said, sorry, I jumped the gun and all that. So we'll see what goes on. But, yeah, it's a couple of big moves there, and one involving, obviously, a former Mariner and Mitch Haniger. So wish him the best. He was a quality player for this team. And got nothing but good things to say about him and good feelings about him. So happy for him if that's what he wanted to do. All right, that does it for us, everybody. Want to thank our guest today. Boy, we had some good stuff happening today with Mark Schlereth. He was gold. So if you missed that, you want to check it out. Jason Mackey talking about Brian Reynolds covers the Pittsburgh Pirates. So great insight from him. Also, El Hombre, Michael Bradley, and Colby Parkinson all joining us on the program. So if you missed any of that, never fear. It's right there on the podcast page for you at seattlesports.com. Just click the podcast tab and click on our picture. It's right there. And click subscribe. That way you only have to do this once, and it just shows up for you every day like a Christmas present. We're going to be back tomorrow right here with Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports Station on 710.